It's Black, Yellow, White. I'm Connor Clements, joined today by Matt Pledger as well. And it's not actually Wellington is wonderful, is it, Pledge? Because the A-League isn't going to be played in Wellington, well, the rest of the time. And we don't even know if there's going to be finals in Wellington. I'm pretty sure there's not, although we're still holding out hope.
Let's role play. If the Wellington Phoenix, currently third, yes, end up second or... first, yes, let's just say, let's dream for a second. Mm. You know, are we suddenly having the final at the Westpac Stadium Sky?
I keep doing that as well.
I'm losing it. Sky Stadium, or is Australia going, nah, let's play it at Sydney or Melbourne?
100%, you know, they're going to say that because we wanted it to all be in New Zealand, and they've gone, no, we want it to all be in Australia, which is expected. It is the A League, but.
It is, but, you know, you talk about live sport. We've recently had the start-up of the rugby competition here in New Zealand.
Yes, Rugby Aotearoa.
Yeah, which has been incredible for live venues. Eden Park, a massive stadium in Auckland, 45,000 people showed up to the first game between Auckland team and can't remember who they played, but, you know, they packed out the biggest stadium in New Zealand for a provincial rugby game. And I'm just saying, if the Wellington Phoenix were playing a quarter final, a semi final, a preliminary final at the Cake Tin, we would get a massive, massive crowd who have just been hungry to watch football for months on months during lockdown. So we're losing out.
Yeah, we are. We are
now one of the best teams in the A League, undoubtedly. And we've had to make sacrifices to keep on playing this season.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's one of those things as well where you're looking at the A-League and you're going, okay, so they're going to play six games really quick, fast. They'll get into the playoffs. They're going to get through all of those as well. It's been mooted that there's going to be a winter season. There's so many things on the horizon for the A-League, and I think the end of this season is just going to be strange because obviously they're going to play it behind closed doors. It's going to be in only a couple of stadiums that they've already said are going to be the kind of isolation zones, if you will. In terms of the Phoenix, I mean, they flew over to Australia a couple of weeks ago. They've been quarantining there. They've also just had Davila and Hooper come back from their own self-quarantine. They've just rejoined the squad. It's been very weird. Do you think that maybe, Pledge, the Phoenix are going to lose all of that momentum that they had gained, and this could be really tough for the Phoenix, or do you think they'll just kick on from where they were and continue on? Obviously, without those home games, there's a whole bunch of factors that are contributing to it. They're not with their families. Six games to go. Where do you think the Phoenix will end up?
This is really hard because you're looking at the schedule and it's six games within, you know, 4 weeks.
Yeah.
It's a hard schedule. But I think we need to approach this as this isn't a restart to a football season. This is the beginning of a brand new football season. Mm. And it's the teams that have been in the gym during lockdown. It's the teams that are back and are hungry and are ready and can find, you know, teams. And I think we're disadvantaged here because we don't have a home. There's no familiarity over in Australia. It's just away game after away game after away game. So, you know, without a doubt, we're definitely disadvantaged. It's really hard to predict because I think what will happen is, you know, you might have teams who are currently not too great in the A-League who have just had a great lockdown, who are just fit, ready to go, rearing, and will just smash it out of the park. It's a new start to the season. And, you know, you do these things for the Premier League when it's the start of the season. You know who's going to be roughly at the top, but, you know, currently at the moment, Wolves are in the top six. Leicester are in the top six. You never would have guessed that, and I think we're going to have the same thing for the A-League.
Yeah, and it's interesting as well that you mentioned that every game's an away game for us. I think more so than the other teams, obviously, being in a completely different country. But there's a few teams there that'll be affected by that as well. They'll have all away games. I mean, Perth Glory, for example, aren't going to be playing in Perth.
Yep. Yep.
So there's is that factor as well for them. And then also, I mean, where are we playing? That first game against Sydney FC on the 17th of July, I mean, the league restarts on the 16th. They still haven't found a venue for that Melbourne Victory versus Western United game. But hopefully they do, because that's on July 16th, so they need to find one fast. The July 17th game, we're playing Sydney FC at Nets Strata Jubilee Stadium, which is definitely not Sydney's home. So I think it's going to affect all of the teams.
I take your point, but we're not even close to family.
And yeah,
I think that's the big thing is, and a lot of our team are young lads, and the other half of the team are experienced football players. You know, there's quite a mix in our Phoenix squad currently. You know, that's going to be a challenge. Libby Kakachi, you know, the dude isn't 21 yet. You know, and now he's overseas, not seeing his family for an extended period of time. And then you've got, you know, more experienced players that are not going to see their wives, not going to see their kids. So this is, and I do understand that will be the case for other Australian teams, but even more so knowing that you are across a massive body of water, you've left your country to play football, going away from your family. We've had a debacle with the Warriors, you know, the New Zealand rugby league team, because the players wanted to go back home and see their wives and husbands, their partners and kids. And a couple of them have just left the NRL, the restart of rugby league. You know, will we have that with a Phoenix player? Will a Phoenix player say, hey, family is a little bit more important than kicking a ball and trying to win this?
Yeah.
I want to head home.
Yeah, you so can't that, blame them as well.
That's another really interesting thing to note. You just, no one knows what's going to happen, and that's going to be exciting.
Yeah, it will be. And so from July 16th, the games restart, and then in August 15th, so mid-August, we'll have the finals. So it'll be all over by in a month in terms of the final games, those six games played out. We'll have the elimination finals. So the fourth place team plays the fifth place team, or team three versus team six, with venues still to be confirmed, obviously. Semi-finals on August 19th and 20th, and then the grand final on August 23rd. So fast turnaround for the league to be all over in just over a month's time. It's crazy to think.
It is really crazy. Injuries will incredibly affect fitness even more so than ever. You know, I think we might have fit teams beating better football teams. The reality, if a player like De Villa gets injured for us, you know, instead of being injured for 3 weeks and missing three games, injured for 3 weeks, 3 weeks could miss five games and the final, and then not be back for it. So I'm chomping at the bits because it's exciting, but you just have no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think that idea of you saying it's like a whole new football season, it's a whole new killer fish, I think that's completely spot on. I think this is like, it's not really a restart. It's just like, okay, we've just got six games, and then we'll see who goes to the finals, semi-finals, and the grand final, obviously. And as you say, injuries, illness, players wanting to go back and seeing their family rather than avoid getting sick. If the coronavirus cases continue in Australia, you can't say that the players wouldn't be within their rights to say, look, I'm worried, I'm going to go home instead, and I've got, you know, immunocompromised family I want to look after, or whatever. They may say, like, look, this is too much of a risk. But yeah, it just remains to be seen. I mean, I'm obviously excited for the A-League season to get restarted. I think we all are. We've been waiting a long time. Behind closed doors, we've seen it with the Premier League already. We've seen it with the Bundesliga. We know it can happen, and the football obviously is going to be affected. There'll be lots more injuries, etc. But at the same time, it's football. We get to watch it. We love it. The TV deal obviously finally got sorted out. The players are chomping at the bit. As fans, we can't wait. So yeah, let's get it underway again.
Totally. One question yet to be fully understood, and one question that I'm sure we'll talk about in future podcasts, is how many players would it take to get COVID to shut the league down?
Yeah, I think it should be like, I mean, we've seen this situation in Leicester, for example, where they've shut down the whole city, yet players are still playing, and Leicester is still playing games. So I mean, what would happen if that was in Australia and you know, Victoria got shut down, which it's starting to get looked that way, like a lot of houses are going into lockdown. Will that mean that some of those Melbourne teams won't play? It remains to be seen, you know?
That's a big question that will need to be answered in the next coming weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, Pledge. I mean, I was going to introduce it at the start, but we've kind of gone A-League first, which I like. But at the same time, we have to talk about this. And I was going to say, you know, with the Wellington Phoenix having to go across to Australia and play all of their games in Australia, one tournament that is coming, that most of the games will be played in Australia, but a lot of them will be played in New Zealand as well, is the FIFA Women's World Cup 2023. That's right, New Zealand and Australia, the joint bid won. And we are going to have a World Cup, a full World Cup, not an age group tournament, a full World Cup in this country. We beat out Brazil. We beat out Colombia. We beat out Japan. Brazil and Japan obviously withdrew their bids. It was just between us and Colombia at the end, but we won, Pledge. How excited are you?
Oh, this is incredible. This is, and I don't think people yet know how big this is. The football fans do. Football fans get it. This is massive, but people outside of our circle, outside of the football family, it kind of just like, oh, it's just some woman playing football. No, no, no. This is massive. And we're talking about, you know, multi-million dollars worth of tourists coming. We're talking about, you know, just imagine being a 5-6-year-old girl going to watch Annalie Longo play for your football Ferns against USA, against France, you know, against Brazil. Like, that is something that will reverberate through football in this country for generations to come. You know, this is massive.
Yeah, I mean, Pledge, I don't think people realise, like, they talk about the financial impact. They talk about, look, we're going to spend lots of money. Yeah, we may have a small influx of people come in and we'll get a bit in terms of tourism. But obviously, it's not going to recoup the massive amounts of costs that we have to pay. And I think that actually they need to look at it in another way and say, think about the amount of young women that we're inspiring to get involved in football, that have role models to look up to, and that on our shores we finally have this immense competition where we can really inspire these women to get involved in the game. And I know that FIFA has its issues, and there's many people that call them out for corruption and all of that, but I think this process has shown that they actually can run something fairly, and that they can, because the bid was won fair and square. I don't think there's any corruption or anything like that. There was no payments under the table or any of that. It was just a fairly run procedure. And so now we have the Women's World Cup, which is massive.
Oh, it's incredible. And I think people are still yet to understand how big this is. We had the Rugby World Cup in New Zealand a few years ago. That was big. I'm just looking up this now. 1.1 billion people viewed the 2019 Women's World Cup.
Compare that to the Rugby World Cup, and it's
1.12 billion viewers.
Yeah.
Turn into the official broadcast coverage. That's just the official broadcast coverage. You know, that doesn't count. You know, I saw it on the news, the highlights. I did this. I saw it on a different channel. This is the official viewership ratings. 250 million unique viewers. Like, this is just incredible. And when you think about New Zealand tourism, like, oh my gosh, this is going to be, you know, we're going to have players after the game. What are they going to be talking about? Oh my God, it's amazing. We're in New Zealand. I just did this incredible walk, right? Was just able to do this or this. And you're hoping in 3 years' time that we've nipped COVID and we're now starting to get back to normal, you know, apart from the Olympics, which has been postponed and will come in the future years. This is going to be one of the biggest global sporting events, one of the biggest global events in the coming 4 or 5 years. And we get to say, let's make it ours.
Yeah. Poor. I mean, you say that as well, like, think about the Rugby World Cup compared to the Women's World Cup. 1.2 billion viewers compared to 857 million for the Rugby World Cup. It's bigger than the Men's Rugby World Cup. It's fantastic to see, and I think that everyone is going to be very excited, and I really hope that we play those teams, the Australias, the USAs, the Swedens, the Netherlands, all of those big teams. If we get a chance to play against them again, especially against the Netherlands again, or the US team, it's just so big for our game. It's so massive. And even if we managed to get a result and go through to the knockout stages, because for a couple of years now we've had tough World Cup tournaments where we haven't really picked up the points or got the results we wanted. So if we go through and we get those results and we pull off a shock and we qualify into the next stages, that is just going to encourage people even more. And I think that it's going to be an absolute shot in the arm for football in this country, especially for women. So I can't wait for this. It's a huge, huge moment.
If we were fortunate enough to get a France versus USA, or, you know, you take any of those, if we were able to get a France versus USA anywhere in New Zealand, I can very comfortably say that that would be the best game of football ever played on New Zealand soil.
Yeah, no, comfortably. Comfortably,
yeah. Because, you know, for the first time, people are going to be like, these are women playing football at a higher standard than the A-League, like not even close to the A-League. This is, oh my, Megan Rapinoe, like this is going to be incredible.
Megan Rapinoe, yeah, she said, she said, I saw a tweet and she said, maybe I have to stick around for that one because she saw it was in Australia and New Zealand. So she was like, you know, she'll be 36, 37 by the time it comes around. But she's like, you know what? I think I'm going to stick around. Yeah.
Get on. And I want to talk Annalie Longo. You know, she's one of our most experienced players. She scored. Now, this is beautiful. She scored the first ever goal in our 2008 Women's World Cup that we held, the under 17, 12 years ago. And she's done it all for the Football Ferns.
Hmm.
How incredible would it be to see her scoring the opener in the 2023 Women's World Cup?
Oh, mate, how good.
And you talk about a career, you know, the career of a woman in New Zealand for the Football Ferns. You know, if Annalie Longo has a big World Cup, she will go down as one of the great Football Ferns. Yeah. Undoubtedly.
Oh, completely. I mean, there's a couple there who could go down as greats. I mean, Rosie White's still in there. She could go down as one of the greats. I mean, we're looking at a Football Ferns team as well that can't wait to get started. And Abby Usig as well. I mean, there's players in there that will just go down as absolute legends. I can't wait to watch it. And you're right. If we get the likes of a France versus USA, it's just going to be a massive boost for this country, and I'm sure we'll do a lot more talking about the Women's World Cup as it nears, but for now it's just off in the distance. There's a lot of work for a lot of people to put in. I tell you what, I will be at that opening game at Eden Park. I can't wait for it. It's going to be huge. 45,000 people, let's hope, pack the stadium.
It'll be packed.
Yeah, and no, we can watch our no we can watch our Football Ferns on the world stage, on the biggest world stage, and hopefully they get a win at home. That would be absolutely amazing in the opening game of the Women's World Cup. So stay tuned for that, everyone. I'm sure that we're going to be watching all of the progress and the work done by all the people at New Zealand Football and at the FFA as well over the next few years with a lot of interest as football fans. So yeah, excited for that. Okay, Pledge, well, the Premier League, Chelsea are playing Watford at the moment. It's 2-0. I'm just dating the podcast for everyone now. But we are watching it. This morning, Arsenal got a massive result over Wolves, who are above them at the table. But that was a huge game. I loved it. I watched the highlights this morning after I woke up, and I couldn't believe it, to be honest. I thought Wolves were going to beat us, because they always seem to beat us.
Wolves are a very good outfit.
Yeah, they are. So I was pleasantly surprised when I saw that it was a 2-0 win. Another clean sheet for Martinez, our third choice keeper. It's crazy.
Yeah, and as well, big win for Manchester United. High school, very, 5-2, very high school.
Yeah, Bournemouth. Yeah. What's happened to Bournemouth, Pledge?
They've just fallen off. You know, we were a couple of years ago, we were talking about Bournemouth as a hub for young English players playing a very attractive style of football, and now they're sitting just dangerously low in the table. Are they still in relegation?
Or they are. Close to it?
They're 19th.
Yeah, they're in trouble.
They're on 27 points. Aston Villa are ahead on goal difference. Watford are ahead by 1 point. West Ham only by 3. You know, it's going to be very tight down there.
Are we going to call it now? Do we think Norwich has been relegated? Are we going to call it?
Oh, Norwich is gone. Norwich is gone.
Okay, yeah. So Norwich, unless...
But that's why West Ham, and I... Oh, pains me to say this. West Ham beat Chelsea.
Yeah, that was a massive result for them.
It was a did you...
I watched the game.
I watched the game. The first half was... Oh, it was just disgusting football. Like, It was a hard game to watch.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Yeah,
it was a hard game to watch.
It was. That last 30 minutes, it picked up a wee bit, but it was still a pretty bad game.
It was a hard game to watch.
Yeah, oof. Especially as a Chelsea fan. I mean, the whole time I was kind of like, wow, like, is this the Chelsea like we've been seeing? And I think Frank Lampard summed it up at the end when he just said, that's not the way we want to play. I'm disappointed with the performance. I think everyone could do better, basically.
Yep. Fantastic from Frank.
Yeah.
But massive game for West Ham because that pushed them out of relegation.
It did. I mean, it's so tight down there. And with Watford losing 2-0 to Chelsea now, it looks like Chelsea are doing West Ham a favour after losing to them. Just seems to be Chelsea's way this season, you know, helping Liverpool win the title, doing favours to all these different teams.
So we've got a fascinating race with the bottom five. Yeah. Norwich gone, but between Bournemouth, Villa, Watford, and West Ham for that final two relegations.
Even Brighton aren't safe as well. I'd put Brighton in there just. I think Brighton need to get to that 39 point mark. If they get 39 points, they'll be safe. But with 36, they're still in with a chance, I think. Just.
And now we have a fascinating race for the top four, but also the top six.
Yeah, well, you've got to...
European football.
You've got to think about it that way, because Man City, if that ban continues, yeah, it is kind of a top seven, actually, if you think about it.
Good, and that's a great point. And, you know, top seven. So seventh place officially kind of becomes
Europa.
Sixth place.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the most Arsenal thing ever if they finish seventh.
I mean, it would be.
How amazing would it be, though, for football if Sheffield United were playing in Europe?
I mean, to be honest, I'd kind of prefer it if Arsenal didn't get in the Europa League and Sheffield did. I'd happily take eighth this season as long as we get above Tottenham, so Tottenham finish outside of those positions as well, I'm happy.
Tottenham got absolutely rinsed last week.
They did. Sheffield showed up.
And let's not forget that the Tottenham season is currently being recorded for an eight-episode documentary.
What
and
current, a season.
Currently ninth.
I can't wait to watch that. I mean, that Amazon Prime doco is going to be absolutely fantastic. I feel like they're cursed as well, because didn't Man City... they had it and they lost as well.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Amazon Prime. Well, Amazon Prime have wasted a whole lot of money.
They have, haven't they?
Liverpool, 20 points ahead of everyone. We do need to talk about the absolute statement, City rinsing Liverpool, because emotionally and mentally, I think that game is bigger than people think. It's not just, end of season isolation, only six games left, doesn't mean anything. Those are going to be the top two teams next year. Let's be honest. Chelsea will still be off the pace. It's still a young team.
Yeah, yeah.
Arsenal will be trying to find themselves. No one really knows what will happen with Manchester United. Wolves, Leicester, you assume won't be there. Tottenham, maybe, but I don't think they're going to contend.
No, I agree. I think it'll be between City and Liverpool. But I think you're putting a bit too much stock in it, because I think most of those players were hungover, mate.
I don't know. Because what you saw is you saw City absolutely rinse them. Phil Foden was incredible.
Oh, I think he was, but I think you're missing the point that about half of Liverpool's players looked off the pace. I mean, Wijnaldum looked like he was back at Newcastle. I thought Alexander-Arnold had probably the worst game I've seen him play in a long time. I thought Robertson looked like he was off the pace. They'd all just got out on the piss and they were too busy thinking about the title win. So as much as Klopp said, you know, oh, we're going to take every game seriously from now on and all of that, I think the players just celebrated a bit too vigorously, and the only player who actually looked like he was okay was maybe Henderson.
Well, yeah, you'd expect that.
Yeah. So Milner, if he played, would have been fine as well, because we all know Milner just drinks Ribena, so.
Never touched alcohol in his life.
Never, ever, mate. A pint? No, Ribena.
I think emotionally Man City would have taken a lot out of that game. Even if Liverpool showed up, you know, hungover, you know, if we want to call that emotionally hungover.
I think it was just, they weren't ready for it, let's be honest.
I still think Man City would have taken a lot out of that game and said, hey, you know, we gave these people a guard of honour. We had to watch them walk past us taking what they believe is their title.
That guard of honour, by the way, terrible guard of honour. Bernardo Silva did not care. I was shocked. I was like, this is not really a fitting guard of honour at all. I think Man City, poor.
Yeah, but what do you expect, though?
Yeah, I know. What do you expect? But they could have at least shown a bit more class, but they did not, so it happens.
So next, I think next season is going to be just fascinating. Next season is just going to be, oh, it's the Premier League. It's beautiful. But I think next season is really going to come down to the last three games. I think it's going to be so tight.
I can't wait, mate. I can't wait. That's why it's the best league in the world.
It is. It's just, and the thing is as well, you know, we had Chelsea, who are currently fifth, lose to West Ham, who are currently fifth from the bottom. Like, that is why the Premier League is the best league in the world.
It's true. It's spot on. Also, is that Kante injured for Chelsea? Gilmore's coming on.
Just now, Billy Gilmore, yeah. By the way, I rate a lot.
Yeah, he's going to be a great player. He will be a great player. Yeah, Kante injured. Ooh, moment. Hopefully he's not out for too long, but it looked like he was a bit ginger limping off the field. He was unaided when he came off, so that's good. That shows a bit, but...
Yeah. It's fine. Season's nearly wrapped up.
Yeah.
You'll have plenty of time in the off-season.
Yeah.
Chelsea, the big thing Chelsea have to sort out is their back four.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Aspi's not getting any younger.
Correct, yep.
I mean, yeah, you still... I'm looking
Reece
at Christensen.
Reece James and Christensen I like. I think Christensen is the future because he's a centre-back that can play. He's also good defensively, and he's okay in the air.
And Zoom is a big no, isn't he?
Zoom is a big no.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. Yeah. Reece James is an absolute menace. Mm. He is nearly 6 foot, 6 foot flat.
Mm.
He put on 6 kilos of muscle during lockdown. He now weighs 87 kilos.
Yeah, that's a solid defender.
He is a pocket rocket. So Reece James, locked in. Christensen, for me, locked in. And now we have this, you know, do we play Emerson at left back? Well, no.
No.
Right? Do you play Alonso? Well, no. Alonso's good. I rate Alonso as a wing back.
Yeah, agreed.
But he can't defend. He can't defend.
He's like Hector Bellerin, mate. He's just good going forward, can't defend.
Oh, jeez. I think he's a bit better than Bellerin. And Zuma, though, you know, Zuma was potentially something special about 5 years ago. But he's just physically he's there, but he technically no, and it's just we're yet to find a really strong centre back partnership, which is essential to winning the Premier League.
Mm,
and you
is.
Look at
yeah.
you look and that and that's why I think Man City have struggled this year is because
Laporte was injured for so long. Yeah,
they had multiple changes in that crucial centre back pairing. Liverpool the same thing all season essentially.
Yeah.
It was Virgil and Gomez.
Yeah.
And that worked incredibly, incredibly well. So Chelsea needs to sort that out. But all teams, if they want to win the Premier League, you've got to sort out your centre back pairing.
Well let's talk about as well. Let's talk about the fact that Liverpool, that pairing, I mean, has been incredible. That whole defensive line this season has been incredible. And you compare that to Man City, where you're right, they were in and out, and Laporte. Whenever Laporte's there, they look like such a better team. They look so
yep.
strong.
Yep.
As soon as you put someone like Otamendi in there, it looks much weaker.
Yep.
And so that back line yep. kind of falls apart a bit. So, yeah, I think that is going to be crucial to next season. It's just, I mean, Liverpool didn't really shuffle their pack that often. They had those players that were always the kind of starters, and then you'd have every now and again, you'd have a Shaqiri, Lallana, Milner, they'd come in. But you always had that trio in the midfield. You had the trio up top, and then you had the four at the back. And obviously, Alisson, I think the best keeper in the Premier League by some distance. I mean, Edison has a sniff. But De Gea has fallen off.
At the moment, he's a clear winner.
Oh, yeah, he is the clear winner. I mean, yeah, David De Gea has fallen off. Schmeichel's okay for Leicester. I mean, Chelsea, let's just not even talk about their keeper. He's useless. Wolves, yeah. Patricio's okay. I think those are the only keepers who are anywhere near it, and I mean far and away Alisson's the best keeper in the Premier League, so he's what a buy he was. I mean, selling Coutinho and buying Van Dijk and Alisson is just crazy. Amazing business by Liverpool, and
That really blows your mind, doesn't it?
I know, and they got them for cheaper than what Coutinho was worth as well. It's just unbelievable, and you see what's happened since with Coutinho.
It's been terrible.
Yeah.
He's also injured, but...
And he goes to Bayern and wins a title, just like our man Sarpreet Singh. Let's go.
I saw this thing of the list of players Bayern Munich bought for... Bayern. It was something like Bayern Munich bought 10 players for the price of Philippe Coutinho. And we're not talking about, you know, scum of the earth.
No, we're talking about Gnabry,
we're talking
Sane.
Yeah, Serge Gnabry, Joshua Kimmich,
yeah, Sane was
Nicolas Sule, Sane. Literally, a team that would finish in the top four in the Bundesliga was bought with the amount of money Barcelona spent on Phil Coutinho, who, let's be honest, he was never the best player in the Premier League.
No way.
I wouldn't even say he was the best. He was never the best midfielder in the Premier League.
No, I agree. I think Coutinho
I don't even think he's in the same level as Kevin De Bruyne.
No, like he's not.
He's not in the same class.
Kevin De Bruyne is different class, mate. Different gravy. He's
that free kick he took. Oh my.
Yeah, he's pure class, and I mean he'll get up into that hole. I think he's got to be in the conversation for Player of the Year.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I think that they'll probably give it to a Liverpool player because Liverpool won the league. But
I think it'll go to Virgil.
If they were going to give it to anyone, they'd give it to Virgil again this season, maybe. But I think if they were going to give it to anyone, they'd probably give it to someone like Henderson or something like that. Just as a feel-good story, but De Bruyne deserves it, let's be honest. He's far and away the best player in the league.
Yeah, and this is the thing, is, you know, when you watch when you're a young kid and you're watching footballers and you go, you know, that's who I want to be like. Don't try and be like what Wayne Rooney was or what Ronaldo is or what Messi is, because you can't do what they did. You know, don't look at Alan Shearer and be like, I want to be like Alan Shearer. Or don't look at Sergio Aguero and be like, I want to be like Sergio Aguero, because there's something about those players that you just can't teach.
Yeah, that's true.
But
you've got to be yourself.
You look at Kevin De Bruyne and you look at how he moves across the pitch, the distance he has from his fellow midfielders, his first touch, his explosion of pace, his passing, his scoring, his vision. It's such a breath of fresh air. And you go from watching the A-League, and the A-League's all right. It's getting better. It's definitely getting better. But you watch the Phoenix, and then you watch Kevin De Bruyne, and you're like, oh my gosh, yeah. I am watching a different world.
Yeah. Different class. He sees things that a lot of players don't see. He's just impeccable with his passing, his movement, you're right, his shooting as well, free kicks. Just incredible. He's an incredible player. He should get it. I think Liverpool, obviously the team of the year, they deserve every plaudit they can get. But for me, yeah, the player of the season has to be Kevin De Bruyne. He's been a different class all on his own. All right, we've got to wrap it up. I mentioned it before. Sarpreet Singh, congratulations, mate, on getting a Bundesliga medal, winner's medal, and the Bundesliga trophy. I mean, it's different to the Premier League. I think the Premier League, it's like, what, 6 or 7 games before you're allowed to get your hands on the winner's medal. But with the Bundesliga, they just say if you're in that main squad, if you're in the first team squad, and I think you just have to make one appearance or something like that, which Sarpreet has, then you win the title. So, yeah, it's fantastic.
Many more to come.
If he sticks around at Bayern, I'm sure there'll be many more to come, because as we've said to Aaron Darman many a time, the Bundesliga, what a league that is. It's always the same. Bayern wins and, you know, taxes and death and all that.
Final hot take to finish the podcast.
Yes.
2022 Men's World Cup, England-France final. Ooh. England winning 2-1.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought you were going to mention the fact that mine stayed up, but okay.
No, leaving that to you.
Aaron Darman.
I don't want to talk about Mainz.
Aaron Darman, congratulations. Mainz stayed up. They managed to finish 13th after looking like they were going to be relegation threatened for so long. Congratulations, mate. But 2022 World Cup pledge is saying, this is huge, that it's going to be a France versus England, the old enemy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
World Cup final. So the holders making it all the way back to another World Cup final. Who's going to win
teams,
that?
Their team's built for it. France, the French team is built for it.
Who's going to win that?
The England team. Oh, England, 2-1.
Who's going to be the scorers? Are you going to say someone like Sancho? You're going to say someone like Foden?
I don't know. I think the standout player will be Harry Winks.
Harry Winks.
I. There is something about Harry Winks that I haven't seen since Paul Scholes.
I am going to say that he is one of the most overrated English players I've ever seen.
Oh my god!
In terms of what he does, he just moves the ball across
everyone,
the field.
Everyone called Paul Scholes overrated until he started, and until you couldn't not notice him. Until there was so much evidence of how brilliant he was that you were like, okay, I get it.
I feel like what you've done here.
Sergio Busquets was overrated. was underrated until people realised how crucial he was.
Nah,
Harry Winks. Harry Winks is going to be the guy.
Hold on. Okay, so you're calling Harry Winks. I say what you've done is you've done a... What Harry Winks will do is he's going to do a Lingard. So he's going to be overrated early, and he's going to turn into what Lingard has become, which is very, very overrated.
Interesting.
We'll see. Hey, you could be proven right, and I could be proven wrong, or I could be proven right, and you could be proven wrong. Harry Winks,
and then mate. We've also got some very, very talented wingers and midfielders coming through.
Sancho, Foden, Greenwood's got to be in there. Yeah. I think Greenwood's going to be a better player than Harry Winks.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can't wait for that.
And Rashford as well up top. That's huge. I like Rashford. He's got good finishing. Obviously,
Mason Mount to be honest in midfield with Tammy Abraham.
You would say that. You would say Tammy Abraham and Mason Mount. Wouldn't you, Chelsea fan? Hold on, let's see if Chelsea can score now just before we round it off. And three. Oh, he's put it over the bar. That's unbelievable. He had his moment. We almost had a goal. Was that Loftus-Cheek? Yeah.
A Loftus-Cheek, another outstanding player that more people need to take seriously.
I think so. Oh, I think they do. He's quality. But apart from that header, which was not.
Yep.
He should have finished that. Looking at
beast. He is built like Patrick Vieira.
Yeah, he's built like Patrick Vieira, but he leans back in the header. Ruben.
If he figures out that he is the biggest, baddest man in the Premier League, Chelsea will be a very good team next year.
He just needs to have that Vieira attitude where he's just gonna bully people. Oh. He's gonna dominate.
We need some Vieira, we need some Keane, just need some mongrel back in the league. And Loftus, do us a favour, mate.
Yeah, do us a favour. I think Keane, to be honest, Keane, and he still remains very outspoken to this day, but he's a league of his own, mate. I don't think I've ever seen anyone since with the mentality that Roy Keane has. He's very, very critical, very harsh on even players that I thought were performing well. He finds ways to say, no, they need to be doing better. But man, what a player he was. Incredible.
Without a doubt. And those are the type of players you need in your locker room, because if no one's ever challenging you to be better, you'll just get comfortable.
Yeah, exactly. That's the Michael Jordan, Roy Keane mentality.
Yeah, you can never be comfortable around someone who always expects more.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. All right. From Black, Yellow, White, it's been myself, Connor Clements, and he's been Matt Pledger. And this has been a pleasure to talk to you. It's been a while. We've given it a couple of weeks, but we're back. The Premier League's back. The A-League is almost back. And we are very excited for the 2023 Women's World Cup. And also, congratulations to you, Aaron Darman, for Mainz staying up. Thanks.
Thank you, congrats. Listening. Enjoy. Have a lovely day.